Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 160, I chat with calibrator Kevin Miller about the 2013 Value Electronics Flat Panel Shootout. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded May 20th, 2013. Episode 160, Value Electronics Flat Panel Shootout. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Man Packs, manly goods on a schedule. Get started today and have underwear, socks, toiletries, shaving supplies, and more delivered to your door. Visit manpacks.com/twit and get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek. This week's guest geek is Kevin Miller, an ISF calibrator, who was involved in setting up and running the Value Electronics Flat Panel Shootout just last weekend. And we're going to talk all about that very exciting event on today's episode. Hey, Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thank you for having me.
So nice to have you back. Now, those of you who are tuned in to the live stream at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Kevin as we go. And I will pass along as many as I can. Now, this was the 9th annual flat panel shootout at Value Electronics, a retailer in Scarsdale, New York. Give us some background on this event. How did it get started? What is its purpose? How does it work?
Well, it started 9 years ago. That's a little before my time. I've been doing it. This was my 6th year in a row. Basically, the objective of it is very simple. It's to determine what is the very best flat panel television on the market for the given calendar year. So it happens right when the flagship plasma and LED panels are just hitting the market, which has just happened a couple of weeks ago. So objective is very simple. We basically calibrate everything to the fullest capability of the display, putting every panel in the shootout on an even playing field. And then we proceed to go through the testing. We show the audience both test material and Blu-ray movie material to back up different kinds of tests like black level or white level, contrast ratio, color accuracy, all of the different parameters that the most important parameters that go into determining what is the best performing flat panel TV.
Now, you do it over two nights, I believe, right? This was Friday and Saturday evening?
Yeah, it's actually two individual events. It's the entire event takes place twice, two evenings in a row. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how many people in each event?
Well, Robert's got a new store, so now his capacity is quite a bit higher than it used to be. He was in a rather small space for many years, but I think we had 55 the first night. I'm not sure the number the second night. It was a few less.
Roughly around 50 or so each night.
50 to 55, yeah. In years past, we could not accommodate more than about 30. So it's grown a little bit, but it's also, there's a live HD feed going on out to, I think YouTube picks it up and it gets put on his site and some other sites too. So it gets recorded
in
high def.
This year it was streamed live, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's actually been streamed live every year that I've done it.
Oh, wow. Okay. We have a picture actually of Robert Zahn in the showroom where this event was produced. Here it is right here, and you can see Robert talking to the crowd and some of the flat panels in the background set up in a line. Now, I wanted to ask you about that. In particular, in years past, or at least last year, you had 6 TVs, and I believe there were 6 in this shootout as well, right?
That's correct. Yes.
And you had them in two rows of three, one on top of the other. This year, they were all in one long line. Why was that change made?
Well, that's a very good question, Scott. I was advocating for the same exact layout as in years past. Robert seemed to think that we would not be able to fit them because of the size of the wall vertically. So if you go back to that picture and take a look at the space above the top of the three panels that you can clearly see there, there wasn't a lot more space to move them up in order to be able to accommodate the LEDs below it without taking out that entire salamander AV furniture thing that spans the entire width of the wall, which is where all of the source equipment and switching equipment and audio equipment is located. So, but in retrospect, I'm going to push for it again next year. Myself and my team all had advised him to do that. We thought that people would comment on that, and rightfully so. I guess we don't have a shot of the right side of the room. What we did with two of the 55-inch LEDs is we put them on articulating arms and we swung them out at 45-degree angles so that it would be easy for the audience to swivel in their chairs and be straight on, because we all know that obviously LED has an issue with off-angle viewing that puts it at a disadvantage.
Exactly.
So, you know, during the course of the event, whenever we had to take a critical look at anything, we always advised the audience to get up and make sure that they were looking straight on whatever LED that they wanted to look at for those reasons. But so.
Right. Okay. Well, hopefully next year your argument will sway the powers that be, because I do agree that. On the other hand, you did have, an actual physical problem there with being able to fit those panels where they needed to go. So it's a tough call, but,
Yeah, I think next year we're just going to have to pull all that stuff out of the way and put the source equipment somewhere else and make it so.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me about the audience. Who was in the audience? Were they like all industry professionals or regular consumers, mix of both?
A mix of both. A number of executives from the companies that were represented in the shootout, Panasonic, Samsung, some industry executives, a lot of press, actually. A lot of press showed up on Friday night, including a couple of editors from CNET, Twice Magazine, and some other publications. I think, as a matter of fact, you had somebody from AVS Forum there as well.
Yeah, we have our write-up, in fact, on avsforum.com, so people can go check that out.
So it was a mix of those three things: press members, industry manufacturers, executives, and consumers.
Now, consumers can go next year just by what? Signing up, going to the Value Electronics website or something?
Yeah, I think you have to contact Value and see if there's room, and that at some point he has to cut it off, because obviously there's only so much room.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how that works, whether you have to actually call into the store or whether you can do it off his website. That's a good question.
I'll find out and try and let people know as we get up to the 2014 Value Electronics shootout, which will undoubtedly occur. Okay, let's talk about the contenders. We had six panels in the shootout. I have a list here, but you can tell us what they were if you remember them, or I can say.
I'll try and pop them off the top of my head. I think I can remember. Three All plasmas right. and three LEDs. The three plasmas were the Samsung PN64 F8500, their new flagship largest screen, 64-inch, and then two Panasonics, the TCP-65ZT60, which is what the company is touting as their absolute greatest ever flat panel plasma, and then the one below that, which is the successor to last year's winner, which is the TCP-65VT60. Last year's VT50 actually won the event. Then the three LEDs, we had one 4K panel in the mix from Sony, the XBR 65 900A. I'm not sure I got every character there correct. I think I might have missed one.
There's an X in there, too.
There you go.
The X900A.
It's the X factor.
exactly.
And then on the articulating arms were two 55-inch models, a Panasonic WT60 series, their top of the line, using an IPS panel, and then Samsung's UN55 F8000.
Which is their top of the line LED LCD TV.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And those were a little smaller than the plasmas. Did they not make by choice, Scott?
I believe that in the case of the Panasonic 55, I think is their largest screen size. Mm-hmm. But in the case of the Samsung, I don't think the 65 was available for us. I think that was the reason.
Well, that's a little bit of an unfortunate mismatch of sizes because, of course, as we know, smaller screen sizes are more likely to not make any errors or problems as visible. They're a little more hidden than they are on the larger screen sizes. So that might have put the LED LCDs at a slight advantage. On the other hand, as you pointed out earlier, they weren't necessarily right on axis with all the viewers unless they stood up and turned around and were able to look straight on. And that definitely puts the LCDs in a distinct disadvantage.
I think in this case, any advantage we can give the LEDs is a good thing.
Well, you and I both agree, I think, that plasma is the preferred flat panel technology for videophiles, people who are really interested in the ultimate picture quality and so on, but that they generally don't hold up as well in a lot of ambient light. Now, that brings up another point I wanted to ask. Was the room totally ambient light controlled? Was it able to be blacked out for people to look at all this content?
Absolutely. We had duvetine curtains that we built. We kind of made ourselves for the front end of the store, which is pretty much all glass. We had the skylight on the roof covered, but we also actually kept them open because the way we started the event both evenings while it was still light outside was to demo fully calibrated day modes on all these panels to see how do these things compete with a fair amount of ambient light in the room. That was a conscious decision. And then we dropped all the duvetine. We also cut duvetine and lined the entire back wall with it. If you notice the picture of the wall, you can see it's all black behind there.
Right.
That wall is actually painted a dark blue. I decided that wasn't a good idea, so we put up a duvetine behind it. But you see off to the Robert's right, I guess, you can see that big piece of black cloth coming down off of the top of the windows there.
It's actually all kind of bunched up.
It's all bunched up, exactly, like a curtain, right? So yeah. you take the string off and it falls and covers the entire window. By the time we got into the dark material, it was still somewhat light outside, so we needed to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about some of the brands that weren't represented? And my question is, why not? I mean, there's LG, there's Sharp, there's Vizio.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about determining what the very best flat panel television is. And frankly, if it's not there, then it didn't make the cut. We didn't consider it a contender.
Right. So you and others, I mean, you weren't the only calibrator there. There were, I think, a total of three, right?
Yes.
So you and the other calibrators and Robert all kind of got together and said, okay, which are the TVs that are likely to be the very best of the best? And then those are the ones you would include. Have I got that right?
Yeah, well, we definitely talked to one another. Absolutely, yes. It's a group decision, yes. No question about it. In the case of LG, unfortunately, their product wasn't ready yet. It was a little, we tried to get it, but it was so close that they actually couldn't get us a production unit.
Otherwise, it would have been in the mix.
Yes, and it was last year as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other question I have about the contenders is, why put the Sony 4K in there? I mean, certainly everyone's interested in 4K, and I hate to almost hate to use that term, UHD, or as Joe Kane likes to say, 2160p.
2160p, that's right. You know, we wanted more 4K in there, quite frankly. I was hoping, and just for sort of a technology statement more than really being a competitor in the shootout, but the Sony was really the only one we could get. And their top-of-the-line LED 2K piece, I think, is the 950. If I remember correctly, I don't think Robert could get one. Otherwise, that would have been in there.
Mm, yeah, I would, that's another question. Yeah, the 950, I think, is the top of the line.
I believe it is.
And it's very well regarded.
So I understand. The 929 from last year was a very nice panel.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Okay, the other, tell us about the source component and the signal distribution. How was that made sure to be even throughout the playing field?
Okay, that's pretty simple. Our main source was Blu-ray, of course, from two Oppo BDP-93 Blu-ray players. Mm-hmm. And they, as you may know, they have dual HDMI outputs, right? So
right.
We wanted some audio for the demos when we were playing Blu-ray material back for the audience. So we fed the video through a top-of-the-line Key Digital Matrix HDMI switcher, which then fed that video signal out to all the panels in the room. And we fed the audio separately out of those two players to the AVR. We wanted to reduce as much as possible the video signal path and keep it as close to, you know, straight out of the player into the panels as we could possibly do. And that's mm-hmm. how we did that.
Right. But it still had to go through the Key Digital switcher. And if I'm not mistaken, you used the same type of cable, the same length of HDMI cable from that the switcher to all the TVs.
That is absolutely correct, yes. The other two sources, the only other video source really was an HD signal generator where we generate different test patterns mm-hmm. out of it was a Quantum Data QD780 HD TV signal generator. Mm-hmm.
Very nice generator. I've used one myself. Yep. And then the last question I have about setup has to do with what's called peak white. All of these TVs were calibrated, as you mentioned already, and you and your compatriots are certainly well qualified to do that. And I learned that you had standardized on a peak white level, that is the maximum amount of light from a white, I don't know if you used a window or a full screen, you can tell us that. But you set that bar, if you will, at 40 foot Lamberts. And that foot Lamberts is just one way of measuring the amount of light coming off of a flat panel. And I was curious why you set 40, because not all the panels could meet that standard.
Mm-hmm. Well, in years past, we've aimed at 40 and fallen well short of it on the plasmas. LEDs, of course, can easily attain that light output. That's a very good question. In the post-production world, the peak light output reference has, for many, many years, and I mean decades, has been 30-foot Lamberts. The reason for that, though, as far as I can tell, is the limitation of the display devices when that reference was set, which is back in the days of the CRT. Okay, and so Sony and Panasonic 19-inch broadcast CRT monitors in the professional world were only capable of reaching 30-foot Lamberts without any distortion, any defocusing of the beam spot size, et cetera, being able to track a grayscale well. And so I think the limitation was just because of the display device, frankly. Mm. 40-foot Lamberts actually is something that David Katzmeier, the senior editor at CNET for television reviews, has settled on years ago. So we were aiming for that. It's a good question, Scott. I think this is somewhat of an individual thing. It depends upon your environment. It depends upon how you view TV, what's best for you. I think that in the average home, a brighter, something approaching 40 foot Lamberts is probably more appropriate for most people. Mm-hmm. you know, if you have a dedicated room where you have the ability to keep, all, you know, almost any light from entering the room, then 30 will work. I mean, I use 30 myself in one of my rooms, but I have very, very good light control. And
see, I do too. I use 30 in my room too, but again, I have very, very good light control, and that's what I use in my reviews as well. SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room is saying 40 is at the top end of the SMPTE standards. So it's not unreasonable. It's not unreasonable to shoot for that. on the other hand, only one of the three plasmas was able to meet it. And the other two, I'll reveal that much now. The Samsung has long, since it was first introduced and people have started looking at it, have said, wow, this thing can put out a whole lot more light than any plasma we've seen before.
That's true. And in the case of the Panasonics, which didn't make that, couldn't quite get up there. The VT60, we achieved 35 foot Lamberts, with in the ISF modes, which are implemented with, Control Cal software, the ZT only made 30. It turns out you can get upwards of 40 if you use a THX mode, the bright room mode. That wouldn't have been a fair thing to do either, because the THX bright room mode has too low of a gamma for a dark environment. Your shadow detail would suffer. So the Panasonic VT60 actually came fairly close.
Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking, did you use any of that crazy high dollar cables?
They were actually Key Digital cables, and they're certainly not cheap. But they're probably not as expensive as the most expensive silver core monster or whatever it is out there that's being touted as, you know, the best. But no, it's, yeah, good quality cable, no question.
Good quality cable, yeah. Mm-hmm. Lawn Dog also is asking, the TVs that were chosen for this evaluation, was the main criteria focused on picture quality and not anything else like features?
Absolutely. In my mind, features have nothing to do with this contest at all. And, you know, I'll tell you, maybe it's an age thing, Scott, but I think TVs have gotten too smart. When they start talking to you, shut that off, please. Features really had nothing to do with it at all. This is all about performance. This is for people, videophiles, who are looking for the best quality that they can get. The features come with it. Any premium television today is going to have all the gizmos, all the apps. That's just the marketing kind of competition between manufacturers. You're going to get that anyway, unless you buy a really inexpensive television where, you know, features will be sacrificed for price. But no, it doesn't have anything to do with us choosing any given model for the event, no.
Right. Was there any consideration given to 3D?
No consideration where we would say, it's known that this panel has the best 3D performance, therefore it's got to be put in. No. And in fact, we didn't show 3D. We certainly talked about it and discussed it at great length. There are a lot of factors that make it difficult. And when you have 55 or 60 people in a room and you have active glasses, for most of those panels, they're active anyway. You've got Bluetooth issues and it's kind of difficult. It would be almost like you'd need to do a separate event and say, okay, what's the very best flat panel television for 3D, and just do a 3D event.
That makes total sense, particularly since in the active glasses case, Sony's and Panasonic's and Samsung's are completely incompatible with each other.
Well, yeah, but in the case of this Sony actually is a passive panel.
Of course,
their first and only. I think it may not be their only, but it's their first line of passive with this panel.
Right.
And that presented another issue. We'd have to go out and buy 60 pairs of passive glasses, 60 pairs of active glasses. So it was kind of, you know, I don't know how you feel about it. I'm pretty lukewarm on 3D personally. I don't really care about it too much.
Mm-hmm. At least in the home. I myself enjoy it in the commercial cinema. You know, I go to IMAX or I go to, you know, ETX in particular, something that, that shows good 3D, and I enjoy it and I study it. I look and see, you know, if they did a good job or not. In the home, there are a lot of people who feel like you do, very lukewarm about it or even actively hate it, you know?
Right.
So, but it comes along with any flagship set. It's just going to be now. It's just a feature like anything else. You can use it or not.
Yeah, I agree. I think in the home where it becomes fun is on a truly, really big screen in a home theater environment with, you know, front projection where you can get a really big horizontal field of view and get really just, you know, drawn into it. And also light control is important because the glasses knock down the light output of the display device by a factor of 4 or 5. I mean, you know, the picture is extremely dim. So if you don't have control over light, you're not going to have a good experience. But also, if you have this small cone of, you know, you're sitting in, on your couch in front of a 55-inch TV, it's the impact is just gone. It's not there the way it is in a theatrical kind of an environment.
Yep. I totally agree. but most of these, most if not all of these TVs did have 3D capability. It's just that you simply didn't test for them in this event.
Yeah, every single one of them is 3D capable.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, I want to go over the criteria that you used or that you presented people with and asked them to evaluate these TVs on. But before I do, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is Manpax. Now, most of us watching here are guys. And those few who aren't, pay attention for gifts for your guy friends. Now, as a guy, there's always basic stuff that we need, of course, you know, and it's so funky to have to go and shop for the stuff or even go online for underwear and socks and shaving stuff and other toiletries. You need these things every day, but who wants to go shopping for them? I don't, and I don't think you do either. I'd be willing to bet. But there's a solution, and that is Manpax. You don't have to go shopping for these things again because you can order them and get them delivered on a regular basis by simply signing up with Manpax. It's a start it, stop it, change it anytime subscription service for all your basic essentials. It's very easy to manage your account, and they remind you before shipments are sent out, so there are no surprises. You can update your next pack anytime you want, or just wait for it to come every 3 months. And, you know, every product is guy approved, as they like to say. And I've taken a look and even ordered some stuff myself. They even carry the underwear I wear. So, you know, what's not to like? There's even free shipping, free returns, easy account management. What could be better, huh? now, for TWIT listeners and viewers, Manpax is offering two exclusive offers. All you have to do is visit manpax.com/TWIT and get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40. So go to manpax.com/twit and get started today. And we thank Manpax very much for their support of the Twit Network and Home Theater Geeks. Okay, Kevin, go over with me, if you would, the criteria that people were asked, the members of the audience were asked to evaluate each of these TVs on. I think there were six basic criteria or categories.
It's actually three groups, three categories.
Okay.
The first one is contrast ratio, which encompasses several different, two different things really, but that would be peak white output, light output, or how bright the device is, and then the
which
black
we were
level.
Talking about earlier.
Right. And then black level, which is actually turns out is considerably more important. A small advantage in black level depth will increase a contrast ratio number pretty significantly. Those two things are the main things that make up contrast ratio. But also, while we're talking about contrast ratio, we're putting up a variety of different test patterns. We measure contrast ratio with the ANSI method, which is a 4x4 black and white checkerboard pattern.
We actually have the ANSI, a picture of the ANSI pattern that was taken by...
There you go.
This one was taken by Mark Henninger, the AVS guy who was there at the event. And I want to thank him for the photos. He's a professional photographer, so he knows what he's doing.
Awesome.
So here we have the what's called the ANSI contrast pattern, and that shows us squares of white and black. How is that used to measure the contrast ratio?
Well, what we did in this case, you could do it a couple different ways, but when there's so many panels on the wall like this, we did what I call on-screen ANSI, and that is the meters that we used actually were all the same. They're Klein K10s. I have a K10A, actually, which is the latest and greatest model. But what you do is you put the meter up on each individual box. You'll start with black or you start with white. Measure all the white boxes, then measure all the black boxes, and you average the eight of each, and then you divide the larger number into the smaller number, and that'll give you your contrast ratio.
Mm-hmm. And this is important because some TVs, most TVs, are not completely uniform. In other words, the white that you measure in one box will not be exactly the same as the white you measure in another box, and the same with the blacks, right?
Absolutely. And that was that's the other component that we actually asked the audience to look at during this particular category of testing, and that is uniformity, right? So we put up a full white field around the room so that people can look at that. Of course, this is another advantage of plasma over LED technology, and that is that plasma has nearly perfect uniformity when it comes to color. LCD definitely does not. You'll see splotches of red and green if you look carefully at a white field on an LCD panel. What does that translate into in real world? Well, you know, bright shots with a lot of white, or even like shots of the sky during the day, you'll see color in it that just shouldn't be there.
So for example, I'm sure you're familiar with the title, The Art of Flight, which is really about snowboarding. And there's an awful lot of shots in there of snow-covered vistas.
Well, absolutely. 80% of the whole documentary is all about that. And that's spectacular demo material for lots of reasons. I mean, the video quality is absolutely exceptional. It was shot in 4K, but it is also a great white field uniformity torture test.
Did you play any of that at the shootout?
No, not this time. Actually, what I did on the for the demo and some of the white stuff was I played a long scene from Lawrence of Arabia. I chose it for a number of reasons, but it was the main one was it was very fastidiously restored. The 65 millimeter film print was fastidiously restored by a good friend of mine, Robert A. Harris, back in 1989. And then just last year, he was brought on as a consultant for the Blu-ray transfer of that film. And it's a pretty exceptional Blu-ray. And there's some good, really bright material in the desert that was appropriate. I was going to use Art of Flight, but I, to be honest with you, a year and a half after it came out, it's kind of like overplaying a record on the radio, you know?
So. All right. Yeah, I can dig it. And Lawrence of Arabia came out recently and is a fine looking Blu-ray. I can tell you that.
It sure is.
Yeah. And the desert scenes are good. You're right. Because they're very light colored. They're not white per se, but they're very light colored. Mm-hmm. And so it does give you a better look into a panel's uniformity.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's continue with the criteria that were used to evaluate the set. Contrast ratio being one, and looking at the whites and the blacks. And by the way, let me just ask you, how did you determine peak contrast ratio? Was it with a window or was it with a full white field?
Well, windows. And the main
puts the plasma on a level playing field with the LCDs.
Exactly, because if you were to use a full field, the plasma will generate about half of what its peak light output will with a window pattern, and that's all because of the ABL circuit, a circuit called an auto brightness limiter, which is something actually that's necessary to make a plasma work, because without it, the draw on the power supply becomes massive, and it's just it's not practical. So, that would put if you were to do the measurement with a full field, it would put the plasma at a distinct disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the you said there were three basic areas of evaluation, contrast ratio being the first.
Yep. The second one is basically color fidelity, which encompasses several different things. The first would be color saturation, or the amount of color in the picture, which is determined by how accurate the color decoding is. Today, this is a lot less of a problem than it used to be, but as recently as 2 years ago, we discovered that the Panasonic flagship plasma, the VT30 in 2011, had severe red push in it. I brought that to the company's attention, and they improved it over the course of the year with a couple of different firmware updates, but never got it quite right.
By the way, can you explain to the audience what red push is?
It's inaccurate decoding, and so the decoding pushes red, and what happens is you look at people's skin tone and they look overly rosy. Okay,
I got it.
Mm-hmm. Reds bleed a little bit, but skin tone is really the telltale there, particularly with fair-haired Caucasians. They'll look just too pink. So moving along, the second item then would be grayscale tracking and the accuracy of the grayscale from like 10% above black up to 100% white. We put up a reverse gray ramp so that you can see a snapshot of the entire grayscale from 0 to 100%. That's another very important aspect of overall color fidelity. And then lastly would be color space or color gamut, which is the accuracy of the primary and secondary colors that make up the picture. So we would throw up full fields of red, green, blue, cyan, magenta, and yellow, the primary and secondary colors in the video system. And I have to say that on all of the displays, it was, I mean, first of all, the color decoding, there wasn't a panel in the lot that had inaccurate color decoding, which was nice to see.
Really nice.
Yeah. And most of these panels have pretty good color management systems now, so you can fine tune your primary and secondary colors or the color space and get it very accurate and very close to the Rec 709 specifications from the ITU, which is what we're after. So in that regard, all of them fared extremely well. So those are really the three main components that make up color fidelity. And then lastly, we go into a discussion of resolution, both static and motion resolution. So, you know, on the static side, you put up a multi-burst resolution test pattern, and, you know, all you have to do is take a panel and put it in, a 16:9 aspect ratio that has some overscan, and you'll see a loss of resolution immediately. Right.
And this is why I certainly always recommend to people who are buying TVs that they put the TV into what's called 1:1 or dot by dot.
Exactly.
Just scanning, whatever it's called by a particular manufacturer.
Samsung calls it screen fit. LG calls it something else. Everybody seems to have their own name for it. But
yeah, that's the unfortunate
one
part.
One-for-one pixel mapping is what it is.
Exactly. So that whereas overscanning, just to let everybody make sure we understand what we're talking about, is the image is zoomed in slightly and some few percent of the image is cropped off the end. Why do they do that? Well, the one reason I know of is that if you do one-to-one pixel mapping, some TV stations in particular, you see little digital hash marks at the top or the bottom.
Compression artifacts,
and some sort of coding as well, I think.
It can be,
Sent by the broadcaster. And so TV manufacturers want to make sure you don't see that, because if people that do see it may very well call and say, my TV's broken, I see this weird stuff.
There you go.
But the answer is it's not broken. It's not weird stuff. It only happens occasionally. And you're going to get a lot better, sharper picture if you disable that and bring it back into what's called 1:1 pixel mapping. So I'm sure all these TVs were set to 1:1 pixel mapping, and
no,
rightly so.
We demoed what this does by taking it out of those 1:1 pixel mapping modes and putting it into an overscan mode, so people can see what's what it's doing.
Mm-hmm. So that's still it. That's still resolution. That is, if you see a still image on the screen. But the other issue, and it's very complicated, really, is motion resolution. When things are in motion, either they're moving past the camera or the camera is panning around, you lose a lot of resolution. And very often, more so in LCDs than in plasmas. Am I right?
No, no question, yes. The only way that you can maintain the motion resolution on LEDs is by engaging the frame interpolation. And, of course, you know, up till now, at least, the whole frame interpolation thing is dicey. Some people like it, some people don't. What it does, in addition to maintaining motion resolution, is it creates this quote-unquote soap opera look, right, where the motion just does not look correct, particularly on film-based material like Blu-ray movies.
24 frames per second Blu-ray movies,
Yeah, exactly. And so you can sit there, and there's a really good motion test on an industry disc called FDP Benchmark, which it's not for sale, but most of us in the industry have this. It's a something that was put together, I think, by a consortium of plasma manufacturers some years back and distributed at CES. And it's a moving thing where you've got these resolution bars with numbers, and you can actually see. If you get reasonably close to it, you can see where the resolution cuts off and where it's lost. And so if you, on a plasma, actually, it's not, this is not an issue. Motion resolution is maintained brilliantly. On LEDs, it's a major challenge. So if you shut off the frame interpolation feature, you will get less than half of the vertical motion in the picture, in most cases below 400 lines. If you turn it on, you'll get it back, but at the expense of the motion and how it looks.
The soap opera effect.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'll tell you what, there was Panasonic has a new version of their frame interpolation, and on that WT60, we put it in weak, which it's kind of an odd name for it, but the lowest the lowest setting of that. Right. Maintain most of the resolution, the vertical resolution, and actually looked really good. It didn't give you the soap opera effect. It was almost undetectable. So I found that really interesting. I hope that that's a trend in the LCD world that spills over into some other manufacturers' products, because it was pretty impressive.
Now, when you were playing clips from movies and so on, did you have the LCDs with frame interpolation on or off?
Panasonic was, we had them on in their lowest settings.
Okay. Undermined in the chat room is asking, is ease of calibration and access to proper controls something that you considered in picking the six in the shootout or not?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Again, it's totally on picture quality, and that's really
it's all about performance. And as a professional calibrator, you know, it's nice to know that X panel is easier to calibrate when I'm going to a job than something else might be. But that cannot be a criteria for which panel we pick. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is, frankly, they're all pretty easy to calibrate, except for the only other variable that comes into play really is that when these things are hitting the market, there's and nobody's touched them, nobody's seen them. Okay, sometimes some firmware bugs will be in, you know, cropping up their ugly heads, and we'll have some issues that need to be fixed, and mm-hmm. that causes headaches in the calibration process. That happens from time to time, but no, that's definitely not part of the criteria for choosing a given panel for the event. No.
Got it. Now, one interesting thing that happened at the shootout, as I'm told, is that Robert Zahn, the owner of Value Electronics and the host of this event, brought out a Pioneer Curo that he had. It was his own personal Pioneer Curo plasma flat panel from probably 2009, which was the last year they were made. Mm-hmm. And you put that up against some of the TVs just to take a look, because of course everyone since the Curo was killed, everyone's been looking for the flat panel that would come along and claim the crown that the Curo has held since then of the best black levels at the very least.
The quote unquote Curo killer. Has,
you know, yes, yes. Everyone's looking for the Curo killer. Yeah. So the question is, how did the Curo fare against, say, the other three plasmas, which would really be the only fair comparison?
Well, I mean, if you looked at the numbers, you know, you'll know even without doing this, the Curo still is the king of black, period. Mm. It's so close now, though, that I think that what happened in this demonstration is, and later when you reveal who won it, you'll understand what I'm saying. But it's so close that it's no longer it's no longer the absolute definitive thing that says, you know, your eye just gets gravitated to the Curo and you say, that's it. This thing is just, you know, it kills everything in the room. It's not that way anymore. The top plasmas, the Panasonics and the Samsung, have really good enough black level that it's so close. But, you know, bottom line, Curo still has a deeper black than either the Panasonic or the Samsung. It does.
Wow. That's
the demonstration was done, actually. If I had to rethink this again, I think I probably will advise not to do this at the next one, because, you know, from my way of thinking, it's all fine and dandy to do that, but nobody can buy a Curo unless you buy it used on eBay or something or whatever.
Exactly.
What's the point?
The point this year, at least, was, have we reached that level finally after, what, 4 years? Could no one achieve what Pioneer achieved? Now, granted, the Pioneer Curo was way expensive, way more expensive when it was being sold than any of the panels that were on the in the shootout. So there is that. I mean, yeah, I guess could do it if you spend enough money.
Well, I don't know about that. Panasonic has quite a number of ex-Pioneer video engineers in their employ, and have since Pioneer exited the TV business, and they still haven't quite gotten there. But you're right. It was actually sort of pressure from, internet people that were hammering Robert, to do this so that they could find out what the result was. And so we did it.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Mark Henninger took a kind of series of interesting photos. I think they're called black levels .jpg or some such. Let's take a look if we can see those. You have to zoom out a little bit there, John, for everyone to see. These were exposures taken at, I believe they were like 4 seconds. So they were not exactly representative of what the human eye would see. But they are interesting in that the Curo in this case has a slight, maybe a bit of a reddish purplish tinge to it. It
looks purple to me, yeah.
Yeah, and the Samsung was a little brighter, and the Panasonic, a ZT60, in this particular test, and this is not necessarily what you would see as you were looking at it, but it was meant to reveal maybe something that you might not be able to see at first glance. Panasonic ZT60 looks like it got the lowest. But in terms of your measurements, the Curo still got the lowest black level measurements, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know how fair a test it is to take a picture of something like this, but I can tell you that if you were standing in front of these three panels, it did not look like this at all.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to point out that we're trying to evaluate these sets as many different ways as we can. And I think what your point is very well taken, that you took a measurement, you stood in front of these TVs, everyone did, and looked at them, and the Curo clearly still had the best black level.
Yeah, it did. But like I said,
but not by as much, not
no,
by much.
No. And you know what, Scott, I think if there was one thing that came out of this entire event, it was the difficulty of determining which one is the best. It's gotten really difficult to do now, because these panels are at the pinnacle of their performance now, and they're all so good that it makes our job as professionals, we're sitting here and we're super nitpicking performance differences is what we're doing. And this was not the case even last year. It's kind of exciting from, I think, especially from a consumer's perspective, like, you know, all of the flagship panels now are really, really good. So it makes our job a little bit more difficult, but it was also interesting to see that they've gotten so close to one another in terms of quality. It's very, very
cool. You've hinted at the final results, which we're going to get to in a moment. But first, no, and it's perfect timing too, because we're almost there. No, it's fine. It's fine. We're almost there. Before we do, though, were there any tests that you ran on the Sony X900, which was the only 2160p quote unquote 4K TV in the shootout? Were there any tests that you ran on that to determine whether it was superior in terms of resolution or in any other way because of its increased pixel resolution?
No, you know, we ran every test we ran on all of them through it. I mean, one of the things that was clear was that the scaling on that panel is very, very good because we didn't have any 4K test material. Everything that got fed into that, and particularly the motion resolution and the resolution stuff, was scaled to 4K from 2K.
And it looked really good on the Sony.
It looks pretty darn good, yeah. I think it's pretty clean. It's very good scaling. There are people out there, and I don't know this firsthand because I have not gotten my hands on their 4K projector, but I'm hearing that the scaling in the flat panel is actually better than it is in the projector. Now, I don't know if that's actually true or not, but I have heard that. But unfortunately, I mean, I literally have a 4K generator showing up this week that I'm going to be evaluating for purchase. But they're just starting to come out now. So it's difficult. At this point, I don't have the ability to test 4K, to be honest with you. So I will shortly, hopefully, and hopefully this generator will be what I expect it to be, and I can start using it. But to date, which we just don't have anything.
Yeah.
What we did have that was just kind of a fun thing was we had a hard drive with 4K material that was provided by Sony, with some Sony movie clips on it. And we took some time the second night. We didn't have the time, unfortunately, the first night. But the second night, we took some time toward the end of the evening. And the second one was really a long, long event. It went 6 hours. We didn't even stop till after midnight. toward the end, we threw up some 4K material and all looked at the Sony and kind of gathered around it, took a look at it. It was interesting.
Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking, do you have an opinion on TV brands that have the best calibration out of the box?
Yeah, I suppose I could comment on that. I would have to say Panasonic in their THX modes is probably, at least in 2012, would be my pick. Conversely, the Elite, it was THX certified also, but the THX preset in the Elites from a couple of years ago was nowhere near as good.
We're talking about the Sharp Elite LCD, LED backlit LCDs. Yeah,
correct. Samsung is also pretty good if you put it in movie mode. Not to say that you're not going to get improvement from calibration. You most definitely will. But I would say those two products in those two modes are real good out of the gate.
Undermind is asking, is the generator you're expecting this week capable of Rec 2020 color gamut?
That's a good question. I'll have to check the spec on that. I don't know. I should hope so. Actually,
that's one of the question marks about 4K coming up is what gamut or a color space.
I was just going to say, it has to be. Otherwise, it's not a fully functional 4K generator.
So. Right. Lawn Dog is asking also about your thoughts on measurements versus what you see with your own eyes. In other words, can good measurements reliably prove a good picture?
Yeah, I would say yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. I agree. And in particular, it's a bit of a schism between audio and video, because with video, we have these measurements that can pretty well determine whether or not a picture is going to look good. Whereas in audio, very often measurements may not reveal whether or not the sound of a particular piece of audio equipment is you're going to find enjoyable.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I think in audio, the room complicates the equation a lot. It mm-hmm. does in video also, frankly, but room acoustics and whatnot are a huge thing when it comes yeah. to determining the performance of an audio component. Yeah. So it can measure perfectly, but if you put it in a lousy room, it may not sound very good.
Yeah, so, exactly right.
You know, video is very similar in that regard, actually, but because it has to do with the color of the walls and the lighting, et cetera. So it's similar. Overall, I would say measurement. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I would say if video display measures very well, you can pretty well take it to the bank that it should perform well.
Okay, we've come to the final moments wherein we reveal the winner of the 2013 Value Electronics Flat Panel Shootout. And drum roll, please. and the answer is, we're taking a look at a video here, which doesn't show at all in my little window anyway.
I'm seeing only the top bar where
we have the different criteria. We're going to try that again. Here it comes, slowly but surely. And we want to also pan over to the right to look at the very last column, which we won't be able to see, or zoom out so that we can see the name. The final results are in the last column to the right.
I can't see that myself.
We
actually
can't see that yet quite. So as John's zooming out on that, here we go. And from top to bottom, I think it is the, let me just take a quick look here. So the top is the Panasonic ZT60. Next is the Samsung F8500, followed by the Panasonic VT50, the three plasmas. And what we're seeing here is the average of all categories. And by the way, the plasmas did all do better overall, without question, than all of the LCDs, right?
That is correct.
Yep. So let's take a look at those. And what is so striking here, and by the way, these are the results compiled from the audience results. And one thing that was interesting about this event was that the audience and the pros were separated out. The professionals got to vote too, but their votes were tabulated separately from the, quote, non-pros in the audience, right?
That's correct, yes.
Right. So when we take a look at the results, we see something quite remarkable, actually. How very close they are. Now, these are the non-professional votes. And we see that the Samsung F8500 won by 0.2 of a point. And that the two Panasonics are tied.
I told you it was close, Scott.
Yeah, but that close? My God.
That's the thing. It was that was not lost on any of us. It was really pretty remarkable.
And that's never happened before in your experience, right?
It's never been anywhere near that close, no.
There was a clear winner in most cases. And here we see only 0.2 of a point separating them. And what's also remarkable is that the ZT60, which was been touted by Panasonic ever since CES as being the Kuro killer, they call it mm-hmm. beyond the standard or beyond the reference. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. The reference being Kuro. And here we have the ZT60 and the VT60, the step down, which is what, $1,000 less MSRP for a given screen size, something on that order?
I think that's correct, yeah.
Getting the same score.
That's right.
Wow. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, you know, let me comment on that. I'll tell you why.
Please, please.
You know, we spent a lot of time talking about why that was. The bottom line is I'm not exactly privy to all of the marketing claims that Panasonic is making on the ZT60. I know that there's a little bit difference of how they're putting the glass together and there's no air in there and this and that and the other thing. The difference between those two panels, the VT60 and the ZT60, is the ZT60 has a more aggressive, more robust louvered filter for rejecting ambient light. Okay?
All right.
That, personally, I think works against it because what it does is it restricts the light output even further than the VT60. So
this is why the VT60 got to 35 foot Lamberts and the ZT60 only got
that's exactly right. And 30. It's also when you're now think about it for a second in 30, maybe you can squeeze 35 in some kind of crazy mode, or maybe even 40 if you're lucky off the ZT, if you put it in custom mode and put contrast at 100. I'm not sure, but those kinds of numbers are not nearly high enough to compete with any real ambient light. So the aggressivity of the filter is almost nullified by the fact that it's cutting the light output capability down so much.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the experts, when we were asked, and we were asked this by us, you know, somebody in cyberspace at the end of the second night, we had a long session of Q&A. What would you buy? Well, I'd buy the VT60, frankly, because I couldn't see any reason to spend $1,000 more, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, I get a little bit more light output. And number three, when we sat there and we spent a lot of time looking at pictures in the dark, we could see absolutely no difference in the picture between the two of them. So,
Wow.
You know, that. So it was an interesting event this year, no doubt.
No kidding. Yeah. Now, one last thing I want to point out here is that the pro scores, which are lower down on that same file, if John can scroll down to the professional results and take a look at that left-hand column, we are going to see something slightly different. Not very different, but slightly different. As we get in there, well, what we're going to see is that the professionals ordered the first, second, and third place entries slightly differently from the consumers or the non-professional members of the audience. So here we are. Here we see in the left-hand column average of all categories. Again, from the top to the bottom is the Panasonic ZT60, the Samsung F8500, and the third one is the VT60. And notice what's here. As predicted, as you said, the ZT and the VT60 both looked essentially identical, and the pros scored them identically. Oh, and here we have maybe a little bit of a... Oh, I see what it is. It's just a collapse. Okay. So the pros score, the average score from the pros of both Panasonics is 8.9, and the Samsung is 8.8. That's is separated by 1/10 of a point.
I would say we're splitting hairs here, wouldn't you?
Seriously, I absolutely would say so. I think what you said earlier is really the takeaway here. That of these three, anyway, you can't go wrong with any of them.
No, you can't, and it becomes I think the decision, the buying decision, becomes. You have to take a close look at how you view TV, what your environment is like, and that's what's really going to be ultimately the thing that makes you make an intelligent decision on which one of these things to buy. I mean, for example, I think the big reason that the Samsung may have won was because of its ability to produce more light. I think, you know, I calibrate almost every single day in consumers' homes, and I can tell you that 90%+ of the homes that I go into are in environments that have a whole lot more light than mine does. So, you know, that becomes a kind of a big factor. And mm-hmm. also I think has a lot to do with why LED is outselling plasma 20 or more to one, because people want that brighter capability. And now mm-hmm. they have the opportunity to actually get a plasma that has, we didn't discuss this, Scott, but I'll tell you what, the day mode on the Samsung plasma is incredible. I mean, we got nearly 60 foot Lamberts of peak light output in a fully calibrated day mode with a gamma of 2.0 and a very nice grayscale, all, you know, no clipping. And that is unheard of in plasma. This is
unheard of.
Regard, it's revolutionary, really. So
They get, and in the fact, 60 foot Lamberts. You could expect an LED to achieve that without easily. Too much trouble.
Easily. Yeah.
But for a plasma to achieve it, that is really remarkable, and that is one of the big stories, I think, of the TV industry this year and of this shootout in particular. And I agree with you that probably the Samsung won. amongst the consumers in the audience because of that higher light output.
I think so too, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But once again, the margin was so thin.
It was indeed.
Really something. Really something. Well, yeah. This is amazing. Do you think
next year we don't have to do an event at all? All you have to do is go eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Just kidding.
Who knows? Next year there might be an OLED.
Yeah, now you're talking. Now we can get into some exciting stuff, right? Yeah.
We can only hope, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But in the meantime, well, what about the fact that Panasonic has announced, sort of, that they are probably getting out of plasma R&D? This might be the pinnacle of plasma, unless Samsung, which has already now done a real revolution, might be able to go yet farther.
Well, according to what they tell me, Samsung is claiming that they're fully behind the display technology and they're going to continue to spend money on R&D improving it. So we'll see if that's the case next year. I've heard the same rumors about Panasonic actually producing the same models in 2014 as they are now and not coming out with anything new. But yeah, you know what? Who knows?
Who knows? That's a long ways away. We'll find out in January at CES 2014.
I guess we will. Exactly. You got it.
Fantastic. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being here and explaining the Value Electronics flat panel shootout. It was a wonderful event. I'm so sorry I couldn't be there. Hopefully maybe next year. But thank you.
Well, I hope you can, Scott. And thank you very much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
You bet. Good deal. Thank you.
All right. So, you take care.
Thanks. You too. Kevin Miller is an ISF certified calibrator. You can reach him at isftv.com. Also on his other website, tweaktv.com. That's tweaktv.com. You can find me, of course, on avsforum.com. And you can email me at scott@twit.tv and follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. And you can also find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks on our new YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/twithometheatergeeks, and also, obviously, at the Twit website, twit.tv/htg. Next week is Memorial Day, so no Twit shows that day, no Home Theater Geeks. We're going to take a week off. The week after that, 2 weeks from now, my guest geek will be Michael Fremmer, a hardcore audiophile, to talk about the Home Entertainment Show, mostly a two-channel audio show, which is happening in Newport Beach the previous weekend. So I'm going to be there myself. If any of you happen to be attending that show, I'll be out by the pool at the Atrium Hotel in Newport Beach Saturday at 6 p.m. to say hi to anybody who cares to drop by. So I hope you do. And I do hope you join me then for Home Theater Geeks in 2 weeks when we'll be talking about the show and all things audio. Until then, geek out.